This week marks 400 years since the first enslaved Africans arrived in Virginia. To commemorate that milestone, Ghana in West Africa declared a year of return for the African diaspora, and they invited American leaders like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to come visit. The World's Rupa Shenoy has also been in Ghana, reporting stories about different perspectives on the history of slavery. Today, a story about the Black American experience in Ghana through the eyes of the woman who organized Pelosi's visit.
At the Avis car rental in Ghana's capital, Accra, franchise owner Mona Boyd sits in the big corner office.
Hi, I'm Mona Boyd.
Mona's at the center of a tight African-American community in Ghana. She's one of the organizers of Ghana's Year of Return, and she's arranged visits by U.S. diplomats and elected officials for years. Still, when she was asked to help with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Black Caucus's visit, she was surprised.
I just couldn't believe she was coming. I wouldn't call it mitigation, but it's just an acknowledgement, yes, this did happen. And you're not crazy for thinking that this awful thing happened. It did happen.
People had seemed to deny the slave trade happened her whole life. The focus had always been on moving on. Maybe because it had to be. Mona grew up in segregated Arkansas. She remembers her parents whispering about lynchings in the kitchen early in the mornings, thinking she couldn't hear. In sixth grade, though, she learned that there was another place where people who looked like her lived in pride, not fear. Some visitors from Tanzania came to her nearly all-Black school.
This was like, wow, meeting the queen to us.
Mona's been drawn to Africa ever since that day.
Most African Americans, you know something is missing and you want to be united with it. If you have any level of awareness about your own identity, where you came from, you would have to start asking those questions.
Mona's something of an expert on this. She owns a tourism business for African Americans traveling to Ghana.
Some African Americans, they have a different mindset about Africans. They think there is a much deeper brotherhood than what I think. But we all have a right to handle this in our own way.
And she's seen many times how powerful the experience can be for people, standing in the same place as their last ancestor to leave this continent.
You just don't know what's going to happen once they get that emotional. We've had people have mental breaks.
It's a tough history to confront. But if you're going to acknowledge that it's been 400 years since the first Africans were forced to leave Africa and arrived enslaved in America, that brings up an obvious follow-up question. 400 years ago, how did it start? So we're going to come back to Mona. But first, I went to see a local historian who's also a former mayor of Accra.
My name is Nat Amatefiu.
People around here affectionately call him Uncle Nat. I asked him to go back to when the transatlantic slave trade began. Uncle Nat explains that leaders in this region had a lot of gold, and word got back to the Europeans. In the 1400s, the Portuguese showed up here with guns.
Primitive guns, but guns. It made a hell of a difference.
There was already a domestic slave trade when they arrived, Uncle Nat says, although slavery didn't mean what it came to mean in America. Enslaved people had some rights and opportunities. Still,
the system already existed. The Europeans saw it and thought, we can try these people in our lands in the New World.
But Uncle Nat says the Europeans weren't going out and capturing Africans. They couldn't. They got sick and died from illnesses like malaria. So some African ethnic groups went into business, warring with other groups so they could capture prisoners they sold as slaves to the Europeans. Uncle Nat says they were organized and intentional about it.
To pursue slavery successfully, you need a highly organized group because somebody has to lead an army there. Somebody has to capture them, transport them to the selling centers, all the time keeping an eye on them to make sure they don't revolt, and then sell them and move on.
Anyone could be captured and taken. Eventually, the Portuguese were replaced by the Dutch, then the British in Ghana. Then, around the world, came the abolitionist movement, the French Revolution, and increasing revolts by enslaved people, all spreading ideas about equality and humanity.
Of course, when the slave trade was abolished, it was a result of a long negotiations with slave owners in Europe, as well as with slave owners here. The big slave-holding nations also demanded repayments.
The British made treaties with African chiefs to protect them from other ethnic groups in a series of wars. Uncle Nat says the British used those agreements to eventually declare themselves the colonial rulers.
They hoisted the flag and claimed that they were now sovereign.
It was 1874. During British rule, Uncle Nat says the African role in the slave trade was deliberately forgotten.
There is a willful amnesia about the roles that we played in the slave trade. Our chiefs and peoples decided, all right, we will not talk about it. Don't ask, don't tell. They created a mythology that we were innocent bystanders whose land was raped by Europeans.
In 1957, Ghana became the first African country to break away from colonial powers and declare independence. It was the height of the U.S. civil rights movement. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke at Ghana's first Independence Day. African Americans started to travel to Ghana. Uncle Nat was in his first year at university. He and some friends were asked to serve as guides.
So I remember they asked us, so who was sold? We said, oh, only the bad people, thieves and drunkards.
They were just making it up because they didn't actually know what had happened.
Especially since the history had never really been taught. And what history was taught was very sanitized. It was a disaster. A lot of African Americans were very disappointed to find this kind of blasé attitude.
This was about the time Mona Boyd first came to Africa. She had just graduated as part of one of the first classes of African Americans out of Boston College after the Civil Rights Movement.
Most Africans, when I came to this country, would not admit that this even happened.
But that was overshadowed by the personal experience Mona had visiting slave castles.
We were constantly, my generation, trying to prove to white people that we were good enough, we were smart enough, that we deserved to be there. But after I had gone through those castles, I didn't care what you thought. You just couldn't define me anymore. To be honest with you, I just felt I am from an incredible group of people. We fought and we thrived. And it made me feel so proud, a kind of proudness I'd never felt before.
Mona went back to Boston and met her Ghanaian husband, Eric, at one of her professor's parties. She went into real estate. Eric was in IT. Soon, they were both making six figures, living in a brownstone in Boston's historic South End.
We were trying to get pregnant when the Rodney King thing happened.
Three police officers facing felony criminal charges were among a group of 15 who stopped a 25-year-old black man, then beat him, kicked him, and
it was 1991. She remembers watching that video of Los Angeles police beating King after a traffic stop.
I remember just weeping, weeping, weeping. And I said to my husband, I'm not going to get pregnant if you don't agree to move back to Africa to raise our son. Why should we raise our son here when our son can go to your country where he will not be marginalized in any way?
Her husband agreed, and their son Selassie was born later that year. Then they moved.
It was a gift to him because we gave up a lot.
They ended up going into the independent car rental business. And Mona found working in Ghana liberating.
I was able to let go that conscious thought about race. Is it race? Is it my color? I was able to leave that. And it was like having a psychic burden taken off of your shoulders, and you could just move.
Mona didn't realize she had more of that psychic burden to shed until a few years later. In 1994, then Ghanaian President Jerry Rawlings apologized for the African role in slavery.
And it just made me feel so much better. I stopped feeling resentful, you know, towards Africans about slavery.
Now, contemplating retirement, Mona's decided she wants to make a lasting change by adding to the small number of Ghanaian business owners. She's going to pass her business on to a colleague she trained.
Maoli started working for us right out of school. He was 24 years old when he came to work for us.
Together, they've made her tour company one of the most successful in Ghana, in part by offering tours aimed at helping African Americans reconcile with history.
It's a very emotional thing that we do because for the first time, Africans are sent to African descendants of the slaves. We're sorry, forgive us.
What they do is take tourists to a village that used to be a notorious slave market. African elders wash the visitors' feet. They eat together. There's drumming and dancing. Black Americans get African names. This year, more than 100 people are going through the process.
They understand, you know, what happened to black people and what black people lost. They took the brightest, the best, the strongest from this continent. So what would have happened had those people not left this continent? What would this continent be like?
Maybe in a way, they'll find out now if more African descendants around the world follow Mona's path. Her son Selassie has chosen to stay in Ghana and pursue a career in music producing, even though Mona would have preferred for him to stay in the U.S. after college.
I thought he would have a better opportunity. I thought he would learn faster there, you know. And he said to me, nope, I am not going back there. I do not want to live in a country where they put 30% of the men that look like me in jail.
The reason Mona came to Ghana 30 years ago is the same reason Selassie is staying now. 400 years after the first captive Africans were taken from their continent and enslaved in Virginia, the U.S. still isn't a place Mona's family wants to be. For The World, Rupa Shenoy, Accra, Ghana.
Even as Ghana is asking for the African diaspora to return, it's in an argument with the U.S. over visas and immigration. Tomorrow, Rupa tells the story of Abdul Majid, who tried to reach the U.S. from Ghana by way of Brazil, and what happened that landed him back in Ghana. That's tomorrow.